Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen, and joining me right now is a couple of folks from the National Alliance of Mental Illness, a local chapter here in the Copper Country, Bill Fink and Catherine Pavola. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Good morning.
I reached out to you because I noticed that May was Mental Health Awareness Month, and it was a good time for us to get together and talk about some things that a lot of us won't be aware of. Also, you have events that run at the Portage Lake District Library, one of them coming up this Tuesday. We'll give you a chance to talk about that because we want to encourage people to find out more, become better educated, and this will be a good time for us to cover at least some of the basics there. So let's start with, what is NAMI and what function does it serve?
Well, the National Alliance for Mental Illness, NAMI, is a nationwide organization. Chapters all over the country, every state, territory, local affiliates and chapters, dedicated to advocacy for the care of the mentally ill, for the families of people suffering from mental illness, so that this doesn't have to be alone. You know, mental illness is kind of our last taboo in the way of illnesses. 50 years ago, to have cancer was a scandalous thing, and nobody would talk about it. We've reached the point where we understand a disease like cancer, muscular dystrophy, any number of other physical illnesses are simply that. They're illnesses. It's unfortunate when people get them, and it creates challenges and difficulties for the family to manage them. And mental illness is simply an illness of the brain. Brain's very, very complicated about how everything works. And understanding what drives different types of mental illness is one of the missions of NAMI, to try to support research, encourage laws that go along with it.
NAMI is the largest grassroots organization on mental illness in this country. It was formed in 1979 by people who suffer from mental illnesses, brain diseases, and their families and loved ones, because there is so little avenue for information when you learn that you have a mental illness. People had to come together and create this organization called NAMI in order to serve that purpose. And it's for advocacy, education, and support. And most people come to NAMI when they are encountering mental illness.
Do the people that come to you, are they normally those that are suffering, or is it the family?
Both.
Both.
Mm-hmm. And you both mentioned advocacy. Who are you advocating against, I guess? Who are you being intermediary?
We're advocating, we're in communication with legislators at the state and national level to have laws and that are fair for the treatment of mental illness, that are adequate, to have adequate funding for mental illness treatment.
For parity?
For parity.
In care,
other physical, parts of the illnesses from the head down, kind of a thing. So that keeps the idea front and center, top of the mind, with our legislators, since this is an important component of the overall well-being of a community in which we live.
In many years past, when somebody was suffering from a mental illness, it was sort of our way of doing things was simply put them in an institution somewhere where they'd be looked after, taken care of, or sometimes very not taken care of, as the stories would go. There's much more of an effort now to keep people part of society and to keep them, in circulation, so to speak, where, we're more in interaction with them. How does that approach affect, what you have to do?
In the 1980s, there was a huge push by the mental health groups across the nation and psychiatrists and psychologists to close the institutions because they felt it wasn't a humane way of treating people who suffered from disabilities and mental illness. So there was a move in the 80s towards local community health centers, mental health centers, and group homes for these people. That was when many, many of the institutions around the state, around the nation, closed. Here in the Copper Country, that's when Copper Country Mental Health opened their group homes. That happened to be at the same time that I moved here, and I worked for Copper Country at the time. Since that time, on the downside of it is the money has not come through to provide the community mental health services to give a lot of these people the kinds of support that helps them remain well, and that helps a lot of people who find that they have a mental illness to get a diagnosis and good treatment. So there's a big gap.
There was a great savings of money when the institutions mm-hmm. were closed, but the expectation was it was going to be a shift in how money was spent. It went from spending money to institutionalize people in large groups to still the need to provide for care within the community where people live. And that's the part that's just kind of steadily been eroded and falling apart. Over the last year or two here in our community, as in communities across the state, our local Copper Country Mental Health has seen drastic cutbacks in funding, which means that a significant number of people who were receiving services through them are no longer able to get services. And there's really very little alternative to providing services. And of course, the need for services can range from very minor, full functioning in life to very severe psychoses that have to be managed through therapy and a drug regimen. And if somebody is within the Copper Country Mental Health Service, they're receiving very good care. But people who are not eligible for that, and that's a significant number, have very little place to turn. Here, even locally in our Houghton County Jail, we will occasionally have inmates who are suffering from mental illness, and there's no other place to hold them. Los Angeles County Jail is functionally the largest mental health hospital in the United States because the system just does not seem fit to provide this bridge to work. When somebody in our community has a very serious crisis and is a threat to themselves or somebody else, and they have to be involuntarily committed, we have to take two deputies from the Houghton County Sheriff's Office and transport them to the nearest hospital where a bed is available. The very closest one is in Marquette. If that's filled up, the next place is
the only one.
The next place is Sault Ste. Marie. And beyond that, we have to go across the bridge downstate, sometimes as far as the Detroit metro area. And that means, of course, that the person in crisis is isolated from their family, that we've tied up two deputies on a 1,200-mile round-trip drive. It's just a very sad state of affairs.
I would add to that that the numbers of people who are not getting service is increasing as the budget is being reduced. And you asked us about advocacy. One of the things that we're trying to advocate for against right now is the privatization of mental health care in the state. Our legislators are trying to push that, and we see that as it would result in a very negative outcome and far fewer people receiving treatment for the dollars that are spent. So that too is a...
If it's privatized, who pays for it? Would it fall on the shoulders of insurance companies, and if whether or not you have insurance either through the state or your own?
Oh, ultimately, of course, the citizens still pay for it. If it's privatized, somebody's going to be doing billing, and maybe some insurance companies would cover a privatized system. But ultimately, those companies are going to be billing state agencies for the money to do it.
It's and a simple fact that when you compare a private agency to a public agency, a private agency is in business to make a profit.
Yeah, they have to.
There are some things that the government simply does better. One of the other things that Bill mentioned, and I'd like to add too, he talked about someone who is in jail suffering from mental illness. The statistics today suggest that 30% of our prison population in this country are people suffering from mental illness who are there on misdemeanor charges that are often a result of the symptoms of their disease. They are in prison and they are not getting any treatment.
Because of I have to attend court on a number of criminal cases. Oftentimes, we see individuals being arraigned for crimes. Many of them petty crimes. Some of them are a little bit more significant in nature. But yes, a large number, many of them, are suffering from some form of mental illness. And I'll give credit to our court system here locally. They're aware of that. They appear to be compassionate about, okay, you did these things, but we know you need help, and trying to direct that person to get the help that they need. And unfortunately, it seems, though, after that individual then walks out of that courtroom, it's really up to them, and they often don't have enough capacity to follow through, that they go and get the help that they were just ordered to go get.
This is how my son wound up in a locked psych ward. He was picked up for breaking the law. This occurred down in Kalamazoo, and they have a wonderful process for dealing with people who exhibit mental health issues who are involved in crime. My son was hospitalized. They had court right in the hospital. He was found to be needing mental health care. He was in the hospital for nearly a month. The court ordered him into a 90-day treatment program upon his release from the hospital. The weakness in that program was, as long as he did those things that were ordered by the court to prove that he was going to his appointments and taking his blood tests to show that he was on medication, when the 90 days was up, there was no follow-up after that. So he just fell by the wayside. And there are attempts to make the service system better, and that's one, having a court room or a court process associated with a mental health serving agency, but there has to be follow-up, unfortunately. That's one of the weak areas, yes.
When we talk about different types of mental illness, the average layperson, myself, you have two categories, and crazy and not crazy. And that is completely wrong, but that's what we're, oftentimes it's as much education as we get, which is why we want to address these things now, so that, we become, understanding of what people are actually suffering from.
Many major forms of mental illness, illnesses such as schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, major depression, suicidal thoughts, and a whole kind of raft of variations between there. What do you have, Catherine?
Well, obsessive-compulsive disorders. Let's start with the statistics today show that 1 in 5 people at any given time are suffering from a diagnosable mental illness, brain disease. Let's talk about mental illness in terms of brain disease, because brain diseases are just like heart disease, insulin-dependent diabetes, muscular dystrophy, Alzheimer's. They are brain diseases. So 1 in 5 people at any given time is suffering from a serious diagnosable mental illness. Schizophrenia, which is a scary one, is in any 12-month period, 1.1% of the U.S. population can be diagnosed with this disease, schizophrenia. Now, that is two times the number of people that are diagnosed with Alzheimer's. It's five times the number of people who are going to be diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. It's six times the number of people who are being diagnosed with insulin-dependent diabetes. It's 60 times the number of people who will be diagnosed with muscular dystrophy. Brain diseases are far, far more common in this country than people realize, but there is so much shame attached to it, and people don't want to talk about it, that we're not aware of how widespread diseases are. Generalized anxiety disorder affects 3.1% of the U.S. adult population in a given year. Obsessive compulsive disorder affects 1% of adults in this country. Panic disorders, totally debilitating disease, affects 2.7% of our adult population in any given year. Mood disorders, which include major depression, dysthymia, which is a low-grade depression that is very long-term, or bipolar disorder, affects 9.5% of the adult population in our country every year. So brain diseases are common, and that would be the first thing we would want people to be aware of.
And also we want to emphasize that the vast majority of people dealing with a brain disease are not violent, they're not a threat, they're not dangerous. They have an illness in many cases that they're successfully managing. I think people would be surprised to talk with the number of people who are in our community who have a mental illness but are successfully managing that and living their lives, being productive members of our community.
Even people who are suffering from schizophrenia, which is really a scary one, the widely held view of someone with schizophrenia is that they're dangerous, they're killers, they could hurt themselves or others. Actually, they're far more likely to harm themselves than to be violent towards others. They're 50 times more likely to attempt suicide than the general population. And in fact, suicide is the number one cause of death for schizophrenics. They're far more likely to be the target of a crime than to actually be involved in criminal activity themselves. So,
and that's part of that, you know, the general fear that, you know, the public would have when they make assumptions that if somebody's suffering from a mental illness, again, they don't categorize it
oddly.
They don't categorize it or in any particular way. They just know it makes them feel uncomfortable, and of course they, you know, they'll immediately jump to conclusions that this person may be dangerous in some way. I've seen with professionals who treat those who have, you know, received a closed head injury. And I know this is, may not directly relate, but you know what they insist is that the original person is still there. It's just that the brain doesn't allow them to outwardly function in the way that, you know, the soul of the person that's there is, you know, is still there. Even they can even be in a coma, and the person is still there, even though the body can't function. And I can imagine it's probably a lot the same when you're dealing with somebody with a mental illness. Inside that, you know, individual is somebody who, you know, could very, you know, kind, intelligent, loving, compassionate, but yet the brain won't allow them to act in a way that, you know, basically the type of person they really might be, you know, outwardly.
We often talk in terms of emphasizing it's the illness speaking, you know, not the person you knew and love, but it's what's happening, what the illness is making them do. And through NAMI, we have quite a number of different programs and services that we try to address different segments. My wife and I teach a program called Family to Family. We have presented it twice over the course of the winter. It's a 12-week-long course with 2.5 hours once a week. And it explores in depth the different types of mental illness, the current medications that are underway with that, coping strategies for a family member to use to respond to their loved one with the mental illness to help them fit in better and work through that. There are other programs NAMI offers. We've just had one person get trained in what's called NAMI Homefront, aimed at dealing with the families of service members and the mental health issues that can come from deployment and combat post-traumatic stress. We have a program called In Their Own Voices, which is members who are what we call consumers of mental health services, relating to the broader public, to a club, the experience of having mental illness and how their journey has gone. Great variety of programs that the organization offers and coordinates to try to help us understand better the challenges facing a community as we manage our mental illness of all kinds of different types of illness and work towards understanding, most especially working towards eliminating the stigma that's associated with mental illness.
In Our Own Voice, the program that Bill just mentioned is a wonderful program that some of our members, our NAMI members, will put on. They are happy to come to an organization and talk about their own struggle working through their illness and coming to a healthy place and how it's impacted them, and help the community learn more about mental illness. And we would encourage organizations, if they're interested in having someone to come out to their group and talk about mental illness, to contact our NAMI, our local NAMI, and try to line up In Our Own Voice presentation. We have had them at many of the local churches. They do a wonderful job, and that's the kind of thing that really breaks the fear factor that the community has about people who suffer from mental illness. That's been a really successful program.
You have your event coming up on Tuesday at the Portage Lake District Library. Is that one of the ones you mentioned, or is that something different?
That's kind of a one-time part as part of our celebration of Mental Health Awareness Month at the library. And you've got some details on that, Catherine.
Yes, we had a number of things. We had already a presentation at the library earlier. We had someone come in, Beth Jukri came in with her quilt collection on art therapy. We participated in the services benefit fair at MTU. We had a table there, and we were trying to just let people know that NAMI is around. We will be having a bag lunch and learn at the library on the 24th. We'll be talking about mental illness. We'll be showing a video titled Out of the Shadows, and it will describe four or five different kinds of brain diseases and how they impact people and the treatments that can be sought to regain one's health as a result.
Now, if somebody is in need of your services, and I imagine if you've found yourself at this point and nobody's been helping you up to now, you're really thinking you're alone and there's nobody that cares enough, or you can't afford to get anybody to help you, whether it's yourself that you identify you need help or with a loved one, what steps should you take?
In many cases, the call, the contact to NAMI is going to be kind of the second phase. Somebody who's in immediate crisis should access regular crisis services. In our community, that's Dial Help, 482-HELP. And that'll get you into the system to get started. And then for the family, going to NAMI.org, NAMI.org, and drilling down, you'll find NAMIMI.org, and contact information for our local affiliate.
We have meetings once a month on the second Wednesday of the month. We meet at the Institute, which is a building just east of the veterinary clinic on Sharon Avenue. We meet there at 6 o'clock in the evening, and anyone who suffers from mental illness or has a loved one can attend our meetings. There is a small fee that you pay per meeting, or you can become a member. But we have a wonderful library with all kinds of information on the various different kinds of brain diseases. So when someone is looking for information, we have a lot of information available, and members themselves share information.
Thank you so much for coming on the program.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.